I'm Laura Croach. I'm the manager of New Zealand Post Writers and Readers Week. And as you can all imagine, we're extremely delighted to have him again with us. This, I suspect he doesn't actually need any introduction. So this is Neil, and this is Amanda. Amanda's here today in Wellington doing a show at the Bodega. So do you guys want to start asking some questions? Or just be famous?
And Amanda's also going to be doing a gig in Christchurch on Tuesday night and Auckland on Saturday.
I think so, Tuesday and Wednesday. And if you have questions for Neil and he doesn't want to answer them, I will answer them through the form of interpretive dance.
Is it good to be back together after so long?
Yeah, it really is. It's getting a bit old. Especially, it got a bit old and then it got surreal. At the point where I was missing her Sydney Opera House gig, where the whole thing originally, when we were going, oh, I'm going to be at the New Zealand Festival, so I'll come over to Australia and I'll come and see your Sydney Opera House gig and then we'll go over to New Zealand together. And then Caroline got an Oscar nomination, and all of a sudden it's like, well, I can't actually be there because I'm going to be at the Oscars, and she's going, well, I'm going to be playing Sydney Opera House.
Sounds like a really tough life.
It got strange. It was very odd, but it's nice to be back for life.
Neil, I saw an interview that you both did actually, and you were in a bath. Are there any plans for you to do take a hot spa in Hammer Springs when you go south?
Nobody has actually made that suggestion to us. And to be honest, I think that our bathing interview was so ultimately unrepeatable. I think anything would be a step down, including the fact that we had this great idea that Amanda, because she does naked a lot better than I do, a lot more often. Would be naked but discreetly bubbled, and I would be in the bath being interviewed fully dressed. So, but because I didn't really want to destroy any clothes, I asked Amanda's assistant to just get me a blazer and a white shirt and a tie, and I'd do it looking. We'll be fine.
Well, we wanted to have a t-shirt too. We didn't manage to get the t-shirt.
But random. But Beth, her assistant, who is very, very cool and imaginative, when she couldn't actually find the kind of clothes that she wanted to put me in for the price that she wanted, went up to a drunk gentleman in the park and offered to buy the clothes off his back for $40, which he was very happy to give her. Which you wouldn't think would be a problem, but when you get into very hot bath water, wearing clothes that have been bought from a drunk, but you don't know they've been bought from a drunk, you just think they're clothes. And slowly this bathroom fills with the odour of elderly barroom floors and, you know...
She didn't tell us the story until after the fact. And then we took a long shower.
So, yes, that was... But I think we did it again. We did it.
Sure. I wish I could do every interview in the past.
I've got another one actually. You're really good with fans. I mean, on the website you give away a lot of stuff to fans, and you really interact with fans brilliantly. And I know in the Philippines there are thousands of them queued. So what drives you to keep in touch with the fans like that? Because a lot of authors and a lot of famous people just draw away from that.
For me, a lot of it has to do with the fact that writing is an incredibly lonely thing to do. It's just you in a room with a piece of paper. And sales do not mean anything. They're just numbers. It's very nice to know that you sold 1 million copies of this or 2 million copies of that or whatever. That's a number. And it doesn't actually mean anything in terms of human connection. What fascinates me and what I love is the moments of human connection. And in some ways, one of the reasons I've embraced things like Twitter recently is because if I'm looking out at a sea of faces somewhere like the Philippines, you know, 3,000 people will turn up for a signing, and not all of those 3,000 people are going to get their book signed either, so you're sort of dealing with crowd phenomena again and numbers. I love the idea that one of those kids in the crowd can Twitter me and I'll Twitter him back. And it'll, there's some kind of connection. And also, people are wonderfully helpful. I love the fact that yesterday afternoon I got a New Zealand SIM card for my phone. And got a Twitter from the guy who does the Vodafone New Zealand Twitter site, just saying, you need me help, you and Amanda need me help on your SIM cards, just send me over. And I'm going, this is great. How would I, you'd never know that there are those connections. And some connections are just goofy and fun. I went to Weta yesterday. And Richard showed me around, and I had the most marvelous time, and I kept exclaiming over these glorious David Tremont sculpted Daleks that they've got. And at the end of my tour, I planned, they took me down to the Weta Cave, and I thought, I'll come buy myself a Dalek. And I'm just having my photo taken down there when they come over to me with a Dalek, and they say, well, she wants you to have this. And I said, well then, okay, I'll pay for shipping. Because I thought, I don't want to carry a Dalek through all these, I'll at least pay for something. But the fact that I could then bring down, accidentally, the Weta website by Twittering, there's a photo of me with my Dalek here. 1.4 million people could click on it and destroy Weta's internet. Probably huge important things that didn't happen yesterday because their website went down under a denial of service attack, completely created by me trying to send people to look at their Dalek. How awesome is that?
And one more question, because I work in a library. I wanted to ask what digital offers you as a writer that maybe the published form doesn't, and how important libraries are.
I think they're two hugely different questions. One of which I know the answer to, one of which I don't. How important are libraries? Libraries are as important as anything gets. Libraries are repositories of knowledge. And when I was a kid growing up, I would get my parents to drop me off at the local library on their way to work. And I would spend my days there. And I've been told by librarians that I'm not allowed ever to describe myself as a feral child brought up by librarians. only because they say that actually encourages people to use them as daycare. They are not. No, you're right, you really are. But I love libraries, and I think they're just as important as anything gets. In a couple of weeks' time, I'm going to be the honorary chair of American National Library Week. And doing my bit to go around banging the drums for libraries and pointing out that, you know, there may be a depression-y, recession-y thing going on, but your library is still there and you can use it, all of its facilities and that kind of stuff. What digital offers? I don't know. And I'm really interested to find out. Because it seems like there are a huge number of things that digital can offer. And there are places where I go, that would be perfect for it. We're doing, in a couple of years' time, an annotated Sandman that's being done right now is going to come out. And you go, that would be an amazing thing to do as a digital edition, the kind of thing where you can actually tap on the panel and you get a list of potential references and places you can go, and you can look up this, and you can look up that, you could listen to that song, and you could watch this film clip, and you could actually see what the context is or whatever. And that kind of thing seems amazing.
Neil, you've written comic books, screenplays, and novels, and short stories, and a whole bunch of different mediums. How do you approach writing for different sorts of mediums? Like, is it much easier or different to write for something that's a visual medium compared to something that ends up being something that's lives in someone else's head?
Yeah. It's different. So what they really have in common is the alphabet. Everything else is different. It's like when you're making prose, you are giving somebody the building blocks to build something in their own heads. You're giving them raw information that they will then use to construct an entire world. With if I'm writing comics, I'm writing a letter to a comics artist telling him or her what to draw in order that we can create something. A film script is even less than that, less the finished thing than a comic script is, because it's essentially, it's a blueprint in the same way that you're giving an architectural blueprint to a builder, and the blueprint is not the house. And especially it's not the house, because at least a builder is probably going to take the blueprint and go and build it. But with a script, you're giving it to a director and some producers, and you go away and you come back and you say, so it's purple. And they go, yeah, what do you think of that thing we did? Well, we put the bathroom in the middle of the kitchen. That's interesting. And they say, yeah, nobody's done that before. And you go, no. But in each case, what's important is the story. And what they're trying to communicate is a story. And if you're me, you're using different techniques and different ways of writing to try and get a story somehow out of your head and into other people's.
Amanda, have you been wedding dress shopping yet?
No.
Planning to?
I can't imagine going wedding dress shopping in the conventional sense. Sounds like a nightmare.
I'm pretty sure that what we'll probably do is just ask Cambriel to...
You won't get married then.
If we do end up doing a traditional type wedding where I wear a dress, I have enough friends who make clothes that I think they would all be really upset if I just went to fucking Vera Wang online.
You could put them in a pit and have them fight it out. last designer standing.
Or I could ask each of my friends to independently, you know, one of them do a dress, torso, and an arm.
I could patch it together with them.
Exactly. I don't know. We haven't really figured out how we're going to get married. So, you know, with possibilities ranging from totally semi-traditional with loads of people and a big dress to getting terrified and running off to the Amazon and getting eloping, you know, in the middle of the woods.
Unfortunately, she made the mistake of mentioning online at one point we were thinking of eloping, and her mother has been sending frantic messages ever since.
I said I made some joke about eloping with Neil's dog.
It was
purely and obviously in jest. And my mom took that the wrong way. I started getting a chain of frantic emails from her saying, if you elope, you won't get any presents.
My mom. What are you going to talk about at the town hall?
I don't know. Really don't. I'm quite looking forward to it. What's lovely is that I have somebody asking questions. So I figure that the joy for me of these things is you get somebody tossing out an initial question, and you get to find out where it's going to go. And I'm really looking forward to talking. I'm really looking forward to answering questions from people. I'm really looking forward to reading something. And I think I may actually print out a few things that no humans have heard yet, apart from more or less, you know, Amanda being busy in Australia getting a phone call from me saying, can I read something to you? So there's definitely a few things that I'd love to see how they work with an audience. Because that's just always fun, the bit where you read something and you get to see what it does, and you get to find out where the laughs are, and you get to find out where the sharp intake of breath is. Which you really don't know, you can imagine. But mostly I'm just looking forward to getting up and finding out what kinds of things they want to know in mind, which I don't know.
Your work is said to have like quite a high degree of elusiveness and can often require the readers to have some, in order to get, I guess, a fuller appreciation of what you're trying to get across, maybe to have some sort of prior knowledge of literary or other things. Is that like a way of drawing people into the story, as a way of helping them be a part of the creative process as well?
I think it can be. I think if a story is going to work, I've always loved the idea that if you're creating a story, you're building something that a reader can enjoy and that they will enjoy reading, but that they can also enjoy rereading. And the process of rereading should offer something else. So it's kind of fun to build something where if you can absolutely read the Graveyard Book and not notice any parallels to the Jungle Book. You can just not notice that they're there, even in the title. I mean, I think it's a direct giveaway. but there are people who read it and love it and just simply don't notice that. And I love the idea that those people could go back having read the Jungle Book and go, oh, he's built all these strange little parallels, and this character sort of maps on the map, this sort of does this. And it's a slightly different reading experience. I'm absolutely fascinated for, right now, Les Klinger, who did the annotated Sherlock Holmes and the annotated Dracula, is doing this annotated Sandman. And that is a very, very peculiar experience for me, because his notes are coming in. And sometimes they will demonstrate that I did something cleverer than I thought I was doing when I wrote it, at which point I feel incredibly proud. And sometimes he will point out that I have somebody reading a poem 6 months before it was published. I'll feel sort of like, okay, yeah. It was published in a little edition. Got it in New Zealand somehow. But there really is that sort of strange, wonderful experience of watching something getting annotated and going, okay, at least half of the stuff that I was putting in there is actually there now for people on the surface. And I have no idea whether or not people will enjoy it more or less, or how they'll relate to it. I just always love the idea that because people are always learning, because people's life experiences always bring them in information, and because lives change, your perspective on what love is, your perspective on what children are, your perspective on parents, your perspective on death changes as you age, then, you know, the people who go and read Sandman every 5 years are reading a different book every 5 years. And I like that.
Speaking about that sort of perspective, obviously everyone says you're not supposed to have favourite children, and do you think the same holds true for your literary children? Like, is there anything in particular that you think, you really are my favourite, don't tell the others?
Yes, but I couldn't tell you, because you might tell the others, and then, then my books would sulk, and then they would go off sounding like, no, I love you too, just so special. What's weird for me on that is the amount that it tends to be, that sometimes the ones that you love best, you kind of love them in the way that you would the small, crippled, slightly hunchbacked child. Because you're thinking they're not quite getting as much love as they ought to. And it's like my favourite Sandman book could never be Season of Mists, because that's so many people's favourite. It's probably Game of You, because that tends to be the least favourite for most people, if they rank them. And I look at it and go, no, you need love. That's my favourite. It's Game of You. With books, it's really hard. And because as an author, on the whole, your favourite is the thing you haven't done yet. Your favourite, or for me anyway, my favourite book is the thing still taking shape in my head and has infinite potential, rather than the normally rather sad thing that I took the infinite potential and made it reality, and now I just look at it going, why is that comma there?
And are there any surprises for you after you've seen your work and made into films that a surprise that you didn't catch you, or that you got that you like the way they did it in films?
Yeah, there are moments. I mean, one of the things I love about film is those strange moments where you actually get a license to laugh at your own jokes, which I love. Those moments where you go, that was really cool. I thought it would be cool. That's cool. With Coraline, which I understand hasn't yet been released here. Okay, good. Somebody was interviewed me today, said it hadn't come out. I'm going, it was out a year ago everywhere else. Good.
My daughter's seen it. She loves it.
I'm very pleased. Of course it has to be. The kids were giving me... Sorry. Kids today, a kid gave me her sequel to Coraline that she had written. Oh. The Bell Downs Revenge. with that, I think the thing that just made me happiest was how incredibly creepy button eyes actually are. Which is this kind of thing that you sort of have in your head when you're writing, but you don't really know, but, you know, it could look incredibly stupid and say, no, that looks really creepy. That's good, I got that one right.
I guess going on from that, how do you view the collaborative process? I mean, you've done a lot of things where you are doing things in conjunction with other people.
I love it, and I love it because you wind up creating things that you'd never have created otherwise. Amanda and I met, we'd sort of been introduced in email by a friend named Jason Webley, who is the city fashion manager. And we used to email from time to time, just sort of waving and saying hello. And then one day I got an email from Amanda saying, she'd sent me MP3s of her album, which I played and loved. And then she sent me a batch of photographs of herself dead. Completely dead in every photo and different. Sometimes naked. She's kind of strange to, before I ever met you, to tell us to be naked and dead. Still, didn't know anything about the tale. And and just this thing saying, would you like to write some story? I'm doing a book of photos of me dead. I've been taking them for 14 years. Would you like to write some stories? And I thought, that's wonderful. That's the kind of thing nobody's ever going to ask me to do. And no matter how long I'm a writer, nobody's ever going to turn up again and say, here are photos I've been taking for 14 years of myself dead and sometimes naked. Could you write stories to go along with them? And it just seemed like a place that I wouldn't normally go for stories. And I love the fact that the stories that I produced, which were sort of bounced off some of these wonderful photographs, and were inspired by them, simply wouldn't have existed if Amanda hadn't taken the photographs. And I love the stories. I think that the stories we produced are great. And I think that's the joy for me of collaboration. The joy is when it works, you get to make something that you simply wouldn't otherwise have made. Whether it's a comic, whether it's a book, whether it's a film, whether it's a story, whatever it is, it's the fact that somebody else has a mind that is completely different to yours. I would never take photographs of myself dead and naked places and then give them to somebody and say, you know, write songs about me doing this. But I love that she would do that, you know, and say, would you like to write some stories?
Having said that, though, is it sometimes difficult to share the process of creating a story, something that's so personal, to actually have to open it up and get someone else, like, sort of take on help to do that?
Well, I don't know that I love the idea that you can actually get somebody in to do the adjectives and the heavy lifting, but it never really works like that, and that's not how I ever, you know, I've been working for 25 years and doing a lot of collaboration. Normally, book-length collaboration occurs when it's something like me and Terry Pratchett, and we just have this book in our heads, and we're talking about the same book, and we suddenly get an audience. The glory of collaboration in some ways is normally when you're writing, either your audience is you, or your audience is some kind of weird hypothetical entity. If you're collaborating and you're collaborating well, your audience is the other person. I wrote the whatever it is, 12 stories and poems and bits for Who Killed Amanda Palmer for Amanda. And if she hadn't liked them, I would have changed them or done different ones, but she was my audience. It's very simple. In Good Omens, Terry Pratchett was my audience for the stuff that I wrote as I went, and I was his audience, and all we were trying to do was make the other one laugh. So it wasn't restrictive. It was actually kind of liberating, because it meant that you knew that morning if a joke was funny or not. If Terry phoned me up and said, oh God, that was hilarious,
I'm afraid on that note, I need Neil to go and collaborate down at the Indigo Theatre with Margot Lanigan.
The awesome Margot Lanigan. Say something nice about Margot Lanigan. Margot is really good. And if you get a chance, mention Amanda's gigs, because while I will be going off to the Philippines to give a literary award on Tuesday, she will be here in New Zealand toiling away at the rock face of music.
And I You should mention that you might be back next year.
Mm-hmm.
I will be.
Hopefully you will come.
But I'll be coming back next year to release an album of Australia and New Zealand related songs. And I've been doing, I was just up in Australia doing some collaborations with Paul Kelly and Nick Harvey and some younger, totally unknown artists and stuff. And so I'll be back next year to put that out, and hopefully you know we'll come for some of it. Some of our
Are you going to the Bodega Lip tonight?
I'll be there. Obviously in disguise. No, I'll just be there, looking, beaming proudly. One of the huge advantages to being engaged to her is I get to go to all her gigs free.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You realise, of course, now there's going to be librarians chasing you as well.